So, gosh, where to start? So, let me give you just a little bit background on who I am, if that might help some. I'm a hacker artist, and I run art.net, and I also do internet consulting, and my website is lily.com. And how did I get interested in wireless? Gosh, I'm asking myself that. It's just so cool. It's so cool to be connected and to have connectivity. And especially at conferences, it's really, to me, it's very vital and important. So, Dillo is...
Oh, yeah, I'm Dillo. What do I do? Well, right now I'm running a consultancy specializing in handheld and mobile systems. I've done a lot of programming with palms and wireless and 802.11 and infrared. Done some work on the Linux IRTA project. So I would agree with Lily that wireless is just darn cool. I mean, just to be able to, like, you know, walk around your apartment or, you know, a little bathroom reading by the light of the 802.11 card. yeah, it's just really a really compelling argument. And you just lost your signal. There we go. So Lily asked me to be here last night. Asked me last night to be here today. So that's what I'm doing here.
Yeah. I'm also part of BayWug. Thank you, Dylan.
Oh, no problem.
I'm also part of BayWug, Bay Area Wireless Users Group. And I was hoping to get some of those folks there, but unfortunately, if they're here, awesome. we're back-to-back with another wireless talk, actually, which is Portal Access stuff, so that might be where some of the other wireless heads are. So anyways, gosh, where to start? Next page. Cool. So this is, why do we do it? Because we can. This is actually a shot from DEF CON 8. So, and these are two feds showing off some new hardware. Let's see. I don't know if they had wireless connectivity there. I know DEF CON was wired last year, so. So what we're going to be talking about is open access networks, which is a lot different from private networks. You know, open access is where they're intentionally open to anyone who's around and who can receive. So we could talk a little bit about private, but there's some open access intentionally. Let's see, what does Renegade Wireless Network stand for? Renegade, to me, to my mind, stands for unplanned, unsanctioned,
unknown.
Unknown. That's good. And so some of the open access wireless networks that have been set up. Last year at Burning Man, they had a Renegade wireless network connected to the internet. They also had an internal wireless network that a lot of people got the two. They didn't realize there were two necessarily. And one was actually set up by some folks at BayWug, the internal one. But the external one was actually John Gilmore. I don't know if anyone is familiar with John, but he runs Toad.com. And he's been very big in the free software movement for many years. He's helped start Cygnus. So John went to Burning Man and thought, hey, you know, it'd be so cool to like to have internet connectivity here. So he brought you know, the what did they call those dishes? You know,
parabolic.
Well, he brought antennas and stuff.
Directional antennas.
And he got a satellite connection. And so, unbeknownst to the Burning Man folk, he actually just hooked up to the satellite wireless and and offered the whole Burning Man wireless connectivity. Now, some of the people at Burning Man were going there specifically to not be connected, so they were a little bit upset. But but most people just didn't even know about it unless they ran into someone who was logged in on the internet, I guess, or so. So that was definitely a renegade wireless network. It was not sanctioned by Burning Man. It was like a hacker just came in and said, hey, boom, we're there. And so that's really cool. So, yeah.
So I think one of the cool things about wireless is that it's very easy to set up, and it's very easy to take down, too. All you need is this actually could be a big problem for corporations. It's very easy to just go out to Fry's and pick up an access point and a couple cards, and you know, put them on your desk, and you know, put them out the window or something like that. And you've got a little. Most offices and you know most modern buildings now are wired for your Ethernet. So all you need is a little length of RJ45 to plug in the back of the access point. In 10 minutes, you know, you've got your LAN on, you know, broadcasting out, you know, radio waves out within a circle of a couple hundred feet of wherever the access point is.
Yeah, actually, Peter Shipley is going to be doing a talk, I think, like a 4-ish or something, about war driving. And that's exactly what that's talking about, is where he's just driving around with the antenna, seeing what networks are broadcasting out over wireless. And this is actually a really big security issue and for companies, because people can just jack in an AP, which is an access point, and like broadcast the network out to the local community. Mm-hmm. So, in fact, I heard one security expert say that wireless actually has set back internet network security 10 years. So.
Yeah, I have a wireless at my apartment, and I think it's really cool that I can get connectivity from the Indian restaurant behind me if I go out to the little patio area. But I also have to remember that, like, I'm broadcasting to basically the entire block. So that's one thing that, and it, you don't even really need to, it's just so easy to sneak it in. And just to set it up, like she said, a lot of people at Burning Man didn't want to be connected, but, you know, somebody just walks in. You know, what are you going to do, keep people from buying stuff?
And I wish I had some more specs on that about how it was set up, but I tell you what, I will have those up on the web at art.net/lily/DEFCON9, you know, later after the talk, you know, in the next couple of days or something like that. So... So let's see, the next conference that was really cool that we hacked was CFP 2001. And I don't know if people are familiar with that, but that is Computers, Freedom, and Privacy. And the last conference was actually in Cambridge, and the one before was in Toronto. And I went to both of those conferences, and Toronto... This is what really fired me off here, what sparked the fire in my heart, was that I went to Toronto, and here we were in a hotel sitting on the, like, OC3 or OC48 cable right underneath the hotel. You know, Toronto is apparently the most well-connected city in Canada. And the hotel for the conference, they only had, like, ISDN, that you had to pay $30 an hour to use down in this area where you had to use their computer. Well, I guess you could jack your computer into their network, but anyway, so and then for the press, and I was the press then for art.net, the only thing that they had was two analog lines in the press room for modems. I mean, I was just like, and then my modem card didn't work. You know, it was like, and so I was fucking with my machine all weekend trying to get the modem card to work, and I was just like, ah! And I needed access, you know, because I like being online all the time. I like working constantly, you know, art.net and stuff like this. So I just like, I remember, you know, that at the conference we had the last session, and they said, you know, what suggestions do you have in this and that and the other? And I just stood up, and the very last comment was, you know, connectivity here sucks. And it was so frustrating. It really was. So after that, I just realized that, you know, this is very important, definitely. So, and, you know, I've been to a lot of conferences working with connectivity. Like, I used to do interops and things like this stuff, volunteering and stuff. So I'm used to having connectivity. So anyway, so at CFP 2001, I was determined that we'd have wireless access. This was a goal in my heart. And I talked with some of the people who were helping to do CFP, who were organizing it and stuff. And they were awesome. They were all for it, too. So when we got to CFP, they actually talked with we were in the Marriott Hotel, which is in Cambridge, close to the river. And right adjacent is MIT. And so anyway, we were talking with Jeff Schiller of MIT, who is the network guru over there, and much more, and awesome guy. And anyway, so we were talking with him about trying to get a wireless connectivity from MIT over to the hotel. And so so when I got there, it was so cool because they had taken a directional antenna and had pointed it to the hotel, and then they had plastered on the window on the second floor this receiver thing that and I'm sorry I'm not more technical here but anyway, it was so cool. It was just like putty glued to the window, and we were receiving the connectivity there, and then it went down to this receiver which had ports on it, which we had, of course, a hub coming off of. So this was cool, and I was so psyched. And but there was still no wireless in the hotel apart from that. And so I was like, and I just assumed that wireless was going to be there, so I didn't bring my AP, you know, from home. I have wireless at home. And so so we were scrounging around looking for an AP. Access point to use to like open it up so that we'd have wireless actually in the hotel as well. And so anyway, I found someone who had an AP, and we plugged it into the hub, and then we tried to configure it, and we were working so hard, and unfortunately this particular AP didn't do DHCP, and we were having technical problems with it, and we couldn't bring it online. Well, Jeff saved the day because he brought over two Apple AirPorts later on with Chris and this other guy who were network gurus over at MIT. And oh, I wish I had pictures of this stuff because, you know, in my mind I have pictures. Maybe it's a good thing I'm an artist because I can paint it someday.
One thing to note about the Apple AirPorts is that Apple took great pains to make sure that it was... They thought they were making sure that it was only accessible with an Apple using a proprietary protocol to get into it. And you have to actually buy the AirPort and, you know, or buy an iMac to get the, or buy an iBook to get the configuration program. But somebody has written a Linux utility, a Java utility that runs under Linux. And I actually used this last summer at a contract that I was on to get my Linux laptop onto their AirPort network. So you just, you know, slap on the WaveLAN card and run this little Java utility, and you can go in and add your MAC address, the card of your MAC into, or the MAC of your card into the list. And it saved me having to wait around for 3 weeks for the guy. There was only one guy who was hardly ever there. that would, you know, normally add in the MAC addresses, and that was how they were restricting things, which isn't really a good way, but it's unfortunately like one of the only ways that you can really control, keep people from just, you know, just trivially getting access to your AP.
Which isn't a problem if you're doing open.
It's really it's just really easy. I just wanted to say that as another example of just how really easy it is to not only set these up, but to you know, configure them and give yourself access.
It cuts out.
Yeah, it does. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's pretty much about all I had to say.
Yeah. Thank you, Dylan. So anyway, so what we did was at CFP 2001. So here I am, fuck this AP, trying to get this. No, I'll go wireless. Thank you. I don't care if I'm cut out.
Okay.
So we're trying to get this AP working on the network, and we're just like, I'm in the terminal room, and I'm just hacking at it, and we're all. And so Jeff comes over with these two Air Force with some other network gurus from MIT, and they float them out. We run wires from the hub out to the hallway, and we put a saucer on either side of the elevator, and Jeff sets it up so that it's on the MIT internal network. Of course, maybe I shouldn't have said that. So anyway, and they are well connected, I must say. So they have like several, probably, I can only imagine, like, I wouldn't even doubt if they had an OC48, but probably OC3s or
something.
Yeah, good.
Something.
It was very, very, very fast. So we were just like, this was like the second day of the conference, and everyone had brought their cards hoping for wireless access. So it was so wonderful that we took it that one step further. And, of course, the hotel, I don't think they had any clue at all that they were wired, which is the whole part of Renegade Wireless Connectivity.
A computer convention where they don't need our internet connection. What's going on here?
So people were floating around, and I was actually checking, and I took my laptop all the way. I have a Lucent silver card on my laptop, and I went up to as far as the 13th floor, and we had connectivity all the way to the 13th floor. It was awesome, and even into the rooms and stuff. The other reason I really wanted connectivity there through wireless was I was doing a talk about ARC.NET, talking about fighting for free speech on the internet. We were actually involved with a lot of that, working with the ACLU and stuff like that. So I needed to be connected for my talk. So that was my very first talk, and it was kind of, it's a long story. We won't go there. So it was awesome, and we had connectivity for the rest of the conference, and people were floating around and everything, and it was just so important to be able to, like, you know, people would be talking, and reporters would be writing stuff up and putting it right up on the web, and it was just like instant, immediate, wonderful for conferences, to have that kind of, description and feedback on in what we're talking about and stuff like that. So the next conference I'm going to talk about is, of course, DEF CON 9. And the wireless access here is very, very, very nice. And it's been so nice to just be able to come here and turn on my computer and set my network to any and be able to connect. This has just been great.
Here's a hint for everyone here. The best access I've found at the con so far is up on the roof because they have an access point up there for the speakers. But nobody goes up to the roof except for the talks. So unlike down here where they have a couple, but you're also sharing it with about, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 other people. And up there you're sharing one access point with about maybe, a few dozen. So go up to the roof.
So I found the network map. And I was checking it out to see how they have their access points. And, of course, I don't know where the points, access points are, which is, you know, probably a good thing. they actually, it looks like they had their access points somewhere else internally to their network, and now they actually have them hanging off the router that connects directly to the internet. So that's cool. That's neat. And I guess that router is probably their firewall. So I'm assuming that it's probably switched Ethernet. So the hubs, you know, you can't see the traffic on the rest of the internal network on the other lines, maybe. Who knows? Let's see. Anything else about? Oh, there is. There are a couple of networks here that you probably. There's one DEFCON-BAD that doesn't work so well. So when you set your card to any, you'll sort of see the different choices. Or the good one is DEFCON, I think is what it is. So. And how are we doing on time here? Let me see. Oh, good. A half hour. I want to leave lots of time for questions. So. The other one I want to talk about is just basically setting up open access from your homes. So that to me is really cool. I think it'll be really cool the day when you are traveling from one city to another and you're never disconnected because people have open access through their homes and businesses that everyone can just hop between one to the other. So that's really cool.
Actually, I've found just in my travels that the open access is kind of the default. A lot of the hardware, as it comes out of the box, is set up to allow anyone in with any MAC address. You know, all you have to do is just complete the hardware level handshake, and you're in, because that's just the easiest way to set it up. And these are usually done to make it, you know, really, really easy, and everybody wants it right now. So the easiest thing to do is just to, you know, like most other things is, you know, you don't put in a root password in, you know, the default installation of the, you know, out-of-the-box installation of a Unix system. Well, most of your wireless access points come up completely blank also, and so if you just plug them in and turn them on, then anyone can get on.
And you could also set them to be password protected if you want to, you know, limit access to the access points. You can also set encryption so that the traffic that's going through the access point gets encrypted before it's broadcasted, I think.
Yeah. But that's not really to be trusted.
Oh, this is true.
The web security, which there have been like already several talks on, is really insecure. Not because they use... The very short version of this is it's not insecure because they're using low encryption for the data stream, but the key space that they start, where they start up handing out keys that you use to do the encryption, the seed, is really short. It's 24 or 40 bits, and the Berkeley paper that was put out on WEP earlier this year, they basically calculated in their tests that you would exhaust the key space after leaving the access point on for 5 hours. So it's not even on for a whole day, and all the possible key combinations have been generated. So that's why just the built-in security that comes with most access points isn't to be trusted. You know, somebody could rifle through, just sit there and constantly send join events to the access point and get a key back, and just keep collecting those. And, you know, they start early in the morning when you first get in. By lunchtime, they've got the whole set.
Pardon me while I just put this back here. So I was just trying to reach a site that constantly updates the page, but I realized I probably shouldn't put that up. So home access. So it's really cool now. You can get APs, access points, that do NAT, and they also do DHCP, and with very little configuration. And what NAT is that's where a lot of times when you get connectivity at home, you have like DSL or some of us are lucky enough to have like T1s, but DSL can almost be as fast as T1 nowadays, especially the downstream coming to you. But anyway, so you get one IP generally. It used to be Pacific Bell, if you got DSL through them, when they were first offering it, they gave you like 5 static IPs, which was so cool to have. But nowadays they're doing PPP over Ethernet, which really sucks. So luckily, some of these access points actually have the configuration that they will take care of that for you, so you don't have to worry about doing any special tricks or maneuvers. The one that I like a lot is the one I'm using is RS-1000 by Lucent. And it does all of that. But anyway, so you get this one IP address to the internet, and what you need to do is, if you have more than one machine internally in your home or on the network you're setting up, what you want to do is you want to run NAT so that you actually have multiple IPs internally mapping to the one IP externally, so that you can go out as one IP, but you can have multiple machines and nodes using the internal IPs. DHCP is Dynamic Host
Configuration Protocol.
Thank you. And what that does is that allows you to set up just basically a range. Generally, people use NAT10, like what they're using here. And that's like a Class A address, so you have like bukoodles of IPs available there. Anyway, so and there's a really good story about NAT10 that I don't know the whole thing about, but Buckaroo Banzai comes to mind. I don't know if that's associated with that, but anyway, so let's see. So DHCP, what that does is that just goes out to the network and it just grabs an IP. And the AP just assigns, as it hears from host, it just assigns IP addresses. And so you don't have to worry about doing static IPs. And they're doing actually DHCP here, which is really nice. Go ahead.
Also, if your access point doesn't necessarily have to support DHCP in order to be able to use it, what I do at home is that I have my access point behind my firewall, and it just passes through packets through to the other machines on the network. So I've got a separate SUN. I've got like an old IPX that's just doing DHCP service. So when I pop a card into my laptop and it finds the access point, the packets just go right through the access point transparently.
Could you leave
to the DHCP
open?
Server, and it's just like it was being on a wired network. So it's great. It's good from like a from kind of a control standpoint to be able to configure the DHCP on your access point, be able to control who get, like, you could set up the wireless to be it's a totally separate network or totally separate subnet, but you don't have to.
Yeah. One thing to mention too, if you're doing a home network, and this is kind of cool, actually. I have, my home is wired as well as wireless. We ran Ethernet all through the house, and Cat5. And this is before we went wireless. And so it's nice because you can have private networks going on. We had like 3 DSL lines coming in, 2 with private companies, actually dueling companies. And little did they know, they were going through the same little connection thing, and if they did, they would have freaked. Wires side by side. Actually, it's Microsoft and Oracle. We're like just touching but not sharing. Anyway, so
never the twain shall cross.
So you can have private networks on like wire-based stuff as well as wireless going on. But also with wireless, you can do. Now, I may be wrong about this, but like Dilla's got the firewall where you can have a private wireless network and then you can have an open wireless network at the same time using different APs, I guess, and stuff like that. So So let's see, what else about home access? I really like open networks where anyone can just drive by and sit outside in their car and log in. I think that's cool. The one thing you have to be careful about with this is, abuse. You know, like drive-by spammers. Where's my gun? So there are things you can do to protect yourself. And I was saying that you probably want to have, you probably don't want to do that. You probably want to have a hub or something. But no.
Yeah, most access points I know don't do any sort of modem translation. They're all digital. They require a network connection.
Yeah.
So you'd have to have some sort of an intermediary system. You could do it with like an embedded type of, you know, black box type of thing. That might be an interesting product.
Can we take some? Okay, go ahead. And who are you? Do you want to say? And what are you doing? A reporter. I don't talk to reporters. Okay, go ahead.
That's actually
controlled
by the spec.
Should we repeat that question? Actually, why don't you just ask it on here?
Say you have 5 laptops and you want to connect them in a private network and you don't care about line of sight or anything like that. You want them to just be mobile in a given area. What's the best hardware for that?
There aren't any particular cards or access points that have greater range than others. It's really situational. It depends a lot on the construction of, like if you're in a building, it depends on the construction of the building, what it's made out of, like, you know, girders, iron girders versus steel. And the other part of that, the other answer to that is that it's controlled by the actual 802.11 spec. In the transmission range and frequency, strength of signal, things like that. It's 100 meters.
So
in order to be an 802.11 network, you have to comply to that.
Yeah. Also, another thing is that if you want to extend the range in your home, you just put an antenna up. Inside so that you can have wider access internally. Lucent
is, WaveLAN.
Yeah.
128 bit.
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
also
that's,
called
that's
the Lucent Gold.
Gold. Silver is good too.
Oh, he was going to say something.
Yeah. You want
to
just I think it's actually the same frequencies that the microwave uses.
It's 2.4 gigahertz.
It's
2.4 gigahertz within, I forget what the decimal range is, but it's the same range that a lot of other wireless consumer electronics use.
Yeah.
This is going to be a problem because 2.4 is been licensed out for a lot of consumer electronics stuff, and now that they're all getting pretty popular pretty much at the same time, Bluetooth uses 2.4 also, but it has about a tenth of the range, so they don't think there's going to be that much of a problem with collisions and things like that. But there are a number of technologies out there; they all use the same part of the spectrum. And so it's going to be kind of interesting to see how they work out cooperating and not overriding each other.
The nice thing is that you can do anything in that particular part of the spectrum.
It means it's unlicensed by the FCC. The FCC has realized that there is certain benefit to having parts of the EM spectrum that are not licensed and you don't have to pay a fee to use, and that for certain consumer electronics products that it doesn't make sense, and it's better for the company, it's better for the economy, better for America, blah, 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 if they just don't charge you a fee. So that's called, it's free and unlicensed. So all you have to basically do is pass, like, the Part 15 rules, and you can use it.
So is there, oh, here, let me give you the mic.
Setting up open access points, it's
fairly important if you care about your link and if you care about the traffic going across your link, probably close off everything except for traffic or outbound traffic to port 22 and or inbound originating traffic and outbound traffic in return on 22 and 80. You also probably want to limit bandwidth because just as there may be a drive-by spammer, there may be a drive-by suck down gigs and gigs of porn or that kind of thing. Also, it's and this point was raised actually in one of the discussions in the general track yesterday. If you have a wireless NAT, and many people get really lazy about using encryption on their own home networks because they're, you know, your home. You can telnet around. You may not care about a particular box, but it's very silly to even on a landline net. You know, it's very silly to assume that no one is eavesdropping. You really should use SSH internally and don't be lazy, and it's even more important in that context, especially if your link is open. If you're doing something and you don't want someone to see it, put it on a landline net behind another firewall. Simple as that.
Can you hear me? We were talking earlier about turning off ports, like if you had a router set up, like telnet port and also 25 for send mail and stuff like that to protect yourself from spammers.
Hello. If you have a public net, you probably want to segregate it and turn off everything explicitly or only allow traffic out explicitly. It's there are just there are too many things, and there's too much opportunity to fuck with shit effectively. So,
yeah. It's great too. I just remember that when you do this at home, you're basically, you know, widening the space of, you know, widening the size of your living room from, you know, 10 by 15 to about 100 by 100.
That I want to add to that too. That a lot of people think that wireless when wireless internally, that it stops at the walls, and it doesn't.
No,
it goes right through them.
I can tell you from just tests that I've done at my place that I basically have coverage around the block. And this is with an access point sitting in like a second bedroom in the lower, you know, part of an apartment. I'm basically underground. I can still go out in front of my place like 75 feet in either direction and just sit there and ping. And there's, like I said earlier, there's restaurants and things like that I can go into and just sit in and, you know, get access to my network, which is great for me, but, you know, it's something I have to remember that, you know, anybody else there can do it too. So this guy's in the back has had his hand up. The guy in the black has had his hand up in the back. Go ahead. No, Lily? Yeah. Go ahead.
Is actually doing access now, so you can just go and they're actually handing out IPACs that are running the Windows E or something like that. And so I've been dreaming about going in and hack. I don't know, Dillo. This is more of a good Dillo question,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, could you come up so I can hear a question?
Here, or why don't you?
Now that it works? Talk directly into it. It seems to be very directional.
I'll just go up front.
And I woke up and I went out into the living room having my coffee, and here comes a van, a white, sort of some sort of private van. and a bunch of hackers jump out of the van. This gets back to war driving. Anyway, and so they're like scanning the neighborhood. And it was just like kind of cool. So and then they all hopped back in, and one guy ran out. He said, "Wait, wait." And he ran over here by the trees, and he said, "I got it. I got it." Into the van. And I guess you had to be there.
I haven't had any problems with that, but I do check my logs. I look to make
That's
sure that just and I'm kind of interested in hearing Peter's talk, because I live right downtown San Francisco in South of Market. I actually registered my access point with God, which is the general, was it the I forget exactly what it stands for. Basically, it's a database of people. Go to God, GAWD.org. It's a database of people that have put in the lat long or the cross street address for where they have an access point and if it's open or not. And it's just voluntary submissions. They're up to a couple hundred now. And you can just go in and say, like, you know, I'm in Seattle, and I want to see all the access points that are in the U District. And it'll tell you. And it'll tell you, like, what they're running. Are they running encryption, if it's open or if it's closed? And it's a good place to just, you know, go in and you know, grab a connection. So I haven't had any problems, and I haven't seen anybody, like, wander. Mine is very small. I have four cards. I know all the Macs. Like off the top of my head, I know all the IP addresses that I'm using. I know all the IP addresses that my neighbors are using. So, you know, I haven't seen anything funny going through there. So, but anyways, you had a question?
Yeah, I was wondering where the future was going with home-based wireless as opposed to like commercial wireless through cellular and two-way FM radios where they have access right now.
That's actually.
That's
actually an interesting question. The interesting thing here is that these are all kind of, they have different. A lot of them have been proprietary. They started out as proprietary, and for very specific or special purposes. And so a lot of them don't even talk like the same protocols, or you know, it'd be hard to it would be an effort to get them to talk to each other. But it's possible. You could easily branch like a Bluetooth type of connection. Out to a device that's hooked up over Ricochet, which is like a regional type of thing, and then out onto the internet. One thing I've been playing around with, haven't really had too much success with, but I've been thinking about using I've been trying to use the Minstrel, which is a CDPD modem, which is works on a Palm series or a Handspring series handheld. And the Handspring is this wouldn't work on the Palm, because Palm uses a single UART to control both the serial port and the infrared. But the Handspring doesn't. Handspring lets you use infrared and the springboard slot at the same time. So one thing I've kind of been toying with a little bit, but haven't had too much time to devote to, is using the CDPD here to get an internet connection. And then doing PPP over the infrared, and basically using a Palm as a wireless router to another system. It'd be really slow, but you know, it might be possible. That's one way that you could do things. Bluetooth is designed to be very short range, so that's another technology that would bridge across to 802.11, you know, where you would have something that has both, you know, like a laptop that maybe has both cards or something like that. So you can do it, but it's I don't know. It would take some hacking. It would take some driver hacking. And you would pretty much have to be like familiar with the spec and basically know your shit. All of which is out there. You know, yeah. It's all out there. You can go look on IEEE, and the 802.11 spec is out there. Like
I think,
that thick.
I think they actually have a link to it at baywug.org, by the way. It is 11:46 right now. So let's take some more questions. Like who has set up or is homes and would like to talk about what they've done. You want to talk? You want to tell?
Is anyone doing it at their work? Has anyone set up wireless access point at their work?
Renegade wireless access.
did they know about it? Okay, so this is approved.
Yeah.
Okay. what do you use for access control? How do you control people getting into or onto the wireless part?
Put it on the executive floor on the top of the building.
I have one word for you on that subject: window washers.
I use Ricochet. It works pretty good. So I'm getting like 250K.
And thanks for bringing that up. Actually, there's a really good hack that happened with Ricochet that people use. Unfortunately, Ricochet is... What they do is, like on the train around the Bay Area, people who have Ricochet on their laptop... people in their same car can actually access the internet through their Ricochet point, so they can share their access. So you have mobile.
Yeah, the neat thing about the Ricochet is that it's actually, unlike most other wireless systems, it's actually peering. It's designed to be peering so that you can, Ricochet will seek out either the nearest access point or the nearest Ricochet modem, and we'll bounce through that, which is where they got the name for the company from, was that you could bounce across modems until you actually found an access point.
Actually, on the train line, too, they actually set up access points at certain. They really think this out about how easy it is to, like, go from one to the other if you're, like, on a Ricochet thing. So it's really nice. So you can have connectivity all the way from San Jose to SF, you know, to San Francisco, and not really notice too much stuff like that. So, but I just think it's so cool. Like, you're sitting somewhere, you have Ricochet, you have internet access, there are people around you who want to join in. A lot of people do this in coffee shops, and they'll just open up the access, and people there sitting around them can actually log on too,
Airports,
that's cool.
Airports too, and not the Apple airport, but the place where planes take off and
right.
land at. A lot of executive clubs are setting up wireless service for their people, you know, people to belong to, like the airline club or their frequent, you know, very frequent flyers.
Again,
what a lot of these people don't realize is that these things leak. So you can just sit outside. I've heard people tell me that the Admiral's Club, American Airlines Admiral's Club at SFO has 802.11, and you don't actually have to be in the club. You just sit outside the doors and plug in.
Yeah, I checked. Wherever I go, I always plug in my laptop, you know, turn on my laptop, and this is where an iPack is so cool to have, or something like that that has that wireless access, is you can just hold this handheld and you can just scan the airwaves and see if there's connectivity.
Zircom just released a series of 802.11 cards for the handspring and for the palm. Yes, in the back? Yes. I haven't heard of any, but I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a scanner either, because this is all, you know, it's all stuff that you can scan. I mean, you know, you just need, the
TCP
proper...
TCP dump or
something. Well, even just, you know, the proper radio, you know, the proper scanner to scan the radio frequencies. Well, you know, you can turn your movie theater into a Faraday cage. It depends on if you really want to jam the signal. You screw up the EM waves coming out, or if you just want to blanket or damp them.
So we have 8 more minutes. Does anyone
Both
else...
Both will screw up your traffic.
I'm sorry, Dylan. Does anyone else want to describe their home connectivity? Or if they're trying to set up... Does anyone have any questions about setting up... Open access net.
Yes.
Wireless. Thanks.
Yes.
Oh, here, I'm coming.
Do I
Can I ask the lady here about the concept she mentioned about limiting bandwidth? Is that something that's built into the access points? Oh, limiting bandwidth.
Is it possible to do bandwidth or QoS on, through an access point?
That's a good question. Not that I know of. Pretty much you have the bandwidth that your connection is, you know, to at least to the hub that you have your access point. Like if you had a 10 megabit hub, but then of course you know where your bottleneck is your internet connection really. So it's kind of a mute point really
I would think that you would have to do, it would take something smarter like a router or a firewall system where you're doing like quality of service or RSVP or something like that where you can, you know, chop your channel up into logical bits.
Yeah, gets a wonderful hacker here. So, any other questions about setting up open access instead of closed? Oh, here we go. I need exercise. Can you state where you're from?
Three times for luck.
Directional antennas, I think, right? Bay Area Wireless Users Group.org, baywug.org has. They're talking a lot about antennas and stuff like that. You know, I wonder if the batteries in this thing are, like, flaky or something. So, oh, it's broken. Yes. It's 55, so we have time for probably one, maybe two more questions, and then we probably should close and let the other people talk. Anything? Oh, Tintel. Oh, okay.
Okay. All right.
So, so last call. Any questions? Any comments? So, you know, feel free to come to us offline if you have questions or you want to talk, and if you're interested in setting up an open access point at your home. And also you can find more information about all of this at art.net/Lilly, L-I-L-E, /DEFCON9. And I'll have more info and links up there for you guys in the future. So so I'm supposed to announce, let's see, the next speaker is Robert Graham, and he's talking about cyber anarchy, which I think this just flows really well. Open networks and cyber anarchy, yay. and then after, and he's replacing Lynn Muir, who was going to talk about SSL. So, oh, are you the SSL guy? Oh, so it got swapped? Oh, maybe we'll have dueling talks. and then after, after Lynn, there'll be Dorio Diaz talking about DMCA. And all I have to say at this point is, you know, happy hacking. Thank you.
Thank you.